Today is the first weekday of the KSFR Winter Fun Drive. I'd like to introduce Tom Johnson. He's the director of the Institute for Analytic Journalism. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you. Good morning, Mary Charlotte.
Welcome back. We are talking today. We're going to air an interview that I played a couple of days ago with Bob Edwards, who is the author of the new book, Voice in a Box, My Life in Radio. And before we do that, we're going to encourage people to give a call right now to make a contribution to KSFR, 428-1393, 505-428-1393. And the reason that we are talking about today that people should get involved and that we encourage you to get involved with KSFR and with public radio is the importance of news. And you, Tom, as the director of the Institute for Analytic Journalism, know more about that than most of us.
Well, I'm not sure that I know more about it, but I'm deeply involved in it. The real value of the KSFR is the local news that our radio staff is able to bring. KSFR has the leading local radio news staff, a staff that actually gets out of the studio and goes to the street and talks to people and gathers data and offers that back to the community to let us know what's going on.
Exactly. 428-1393 is the number. Now, doing that is not easy. It takes resources. It takes people like Bill Dupuy and Dan Garrity and the many wonderful volunteers. And it's for a reason, and that is letting people know what's going on. Why is that important?
Well, I believe in fact-based decision-making. Not often enough do we see fact trumping myth, but in fact, I think that generally it does at an important level. And therefore, a simple fact would be, well, there's an election coming up, that's fine, but how do we find out where our local voting place is? And it's what are the issues that are going to be on that ballot? And so that's the kind of local news that we need to just simply be engaged with if we are going to be active citizens and keep our community viable.
Speaking of which, there's an election tomorrow.
That's right. A number of bond issues, a number of people up for various positions and or for city councilors. I encourage everybody to go online and to gather that information and be sure and get out and vote. As we know, all across the country, the idea of voting is being challenged by people claiming various vote frauds and things of that nature. And I think there's 23 different states that have voter ID issues pushing through the legislature. What the evidence does show, again, back to fact-based voting, is that the amount of voting fraud is trivial compared to things like election fraud. And so I won't go into a discussion of that now, but it's the kind of thing that emphasizes the need for all citizens to get out and vote, and as I say, know that the election's coming up, and to inform yourself. And one of the ways to do that is by listening to KSFR here in Santa Fe.
428-1393. Let's get the phones ringing. If you support local news and if you support the Radio Cafe, if you're one of the people who listens to this show every day, give us a call. We've got a very big week lined up for you. I have interviewed the people who wrote the man who wrote the biography of Malcolm X, which is now considered the definitive biography. And unfortunately, he died 2 days before it was published. And the people who edited the book and worked with him for years and years and years are going to be with us in the next few days and much, much more. But today, it's Bob Edwards. So why don't we do this? Give us a call, ladies and gentlemen who are listening, to pledge your support to KSFR, 428-1393. And we will go to Bob Edwards. His book is called A Voice in the Box, My Life in Radio. And as you probably know, Bob Edwards is a longtime NPR reporter and host of Morning Edition, which was the show that he was in on from the very first day. He was on Morning Edition when it began and was there for nearly 25 years, is now in XM Radio. And we'll actually hear about that during this hour. But give a call, 428-1393, 428-1393, and let's go now to Bob Edwards.
Welcome, Bob Edwards, to the Radio Cafe.
Oh, it's, I love what you've done with the place. Great being here.
So this book of yours is a very personal and vivid memoir of your life in radio. Radio was a calling for you. You knew when you were a very small child that you wanted to do it. And you had various jobs in radio, and then you were at NPR almost at the beginning. Tell us about NPR in the early days. What was its original mission, and what was it like to work there when you were in your 20s in the 1970s working there?
Well, it was maybe 80 people by the time I got there in 1974, and we all knew each other, and we knew each other's children and their names, and it was, you know, that intimate. It was people who had a dream that radio could be different, that it was important in people's lives, that it was very personal, that it could change communities, it could be a positive force for good, all of those good things. What we didn't have were resources, the way NPR has them in great depth now. We had no overseas bureaus. We had no domestic bureaus to speak of. We had, I think, San Francisco and New York. We didn't even have Chicago yet. So we didn't have the expensive toys and a lot of depth of personnel to do the kinds of things that NPR does so well today. But it was intimate and was fun, and we dreamed a lot. And, you know, over time, those dreams came true.
You talked about how you kind of had an attitude. You had this idea of Edward R. Murrow and CBS and figured you would eventually end up in commercial radio. And there was this moment where you realized that NPR was, in fact, the place for you. What happened?
I was in the CBS newsroom taking a writing test on the day that Saigon fell and the end of that long, long war. And where was I? I was not in my own newsroom reporting this as I should be. Other people were doing it, you know, probably better than I could, but it just felt wrong to me that I realized on that day that NPR would do a much better job of wrapping up that war and explaining to listeners what the day meant than CBS would. As good as they were at the time, NPR had the airtime and would give it, you know, the depth and provide all the historical background that that story required. And I felt ashamed, and it turned me around. I thought NPR was, I just kind of dismissed it before then, you know, and then I just felt this sense of shame and dedication to the future of the place that where I was actually working rather than the place I had aspired to work.
How did NPR really take off and earn its reputation as a more credible news source than commercial broadcasters?
Well, several things happened. One was the birth of Morning Edition, which kind of extended the NPR's presentation into prime time. Morning drive time is radio's prime time. Another, curiously enough, was Ronald Reagan, who partially deregulated radio and removed the public service requirement from commercial licensees. You know, the commercial stations, well, public stations too at that time, had to pledge so much public service programming as a condition for renewing their license every 3 years. And Ronald Reagan took that away. And what happened was most commercial newsrooms fired their news staffs. Most commercial radio stations fired the news staff. So news became very scarce on the radio. Except in public radio. Local stations and NPR were doing news, and people found that. The other thing was FM. FM was not standard equipment in a radio. You would go to a store and buy a radio, and they'd hand you an AM radio. And when you bought a car, you would get only an AM radio unless you paid an extra $100 to get FM. Most NPR stations were FM. So until FM became standard equipment in a radio, NPR and its local stations weren't going anywhere. So that was a big breakthrough, that people could actually listen to us. So I think it was those three factors. And NPR got healthy. People started contributing more. We also changed the financial structure of how NPR was financed. all of that benefited the network and made it grow and add programs and bureaus. And finally got overseas bureaus. When Morning Edition started, we put Robert Siegel in London, and that was the first overseas employee of NPR. And now look at it. There's 17 bureaus, and really the newspapers and commercial networks are closing bureaus. NPR is opening them. That's very exciting.
You were the anchor on Morning Edition when it started, and it became an institution that centered around your work for almost 25 years. But at the beginning, there was real question about whether having All Things Considered, which you were doing, and then also Morning Edition, whether that would dilute the network and make it basically two mediocre programs as opposed to one stellar program. But you did it, and you built that program. What was it like at the beginning? I mean, leaving aside getting up at 1 in the morning and driving to work while the drunks were leaving the bars and weaving around the roads and all those things that you write about in your book. But what was Morning Edition like, and how did you build that program?
Well, the NPR promised its reporters that resources would not be diluted, that Morning Edition would find other contributors and hire commentators and other contributors to fill out the program, and it wouldn't stretch the reporting staff. Well, they knew better than that. And ultimately, you know, the reporters had to serve both shows and additional programs as we added them. And they had to work harder for a time. And then as the network grew, the reporting staff expanded, and now they have sufficient number of reporters to serve all the programs. But it was a stretch there at the beginning, and it was rough, and we had a lot of live interviews. Oh, my God, did we have live interviews, because they don't require reporters, and they don't even require editors to edit them. You just do them. And so every day I would interview another member of Congress. We, you know, sarcastically called the feature Meet the Member. But our producers also thought it was important to raise our profile here in Washington, D.C., that Congress would get to know us if we keep inviting them on our program. And it would be easier to get that big, important interview when you really, really needed it. They would know who NPR is. We were still identifying ourselves, still in the 70s. This was 1979 when we started Morning Edition. We were still trying to get known. And then Morning Edition helped do that.
We're talking to Bob Edwards.
And we're here in the cafe with Tom Johnson, and we want to thank Marilyn Mason for calling. She is going to the reception. Now, let's tell people for a moment about what's going on. Bob Edwards, is not only whom you've just been listening to, has written this book that is available as a gift if you make a donation to KSFR in a certain amount, which they can tell you when you call 428-1393. 428-1393. But there's also a reception this Friday from 5 to 7 at Rio Chama Steakhouse, and Bob Edwards will be there signing his memoir, and it's going to be very deluxe. Champagne, hors d'oeuvres, wine, all kinds of good things, and music by the Hot Club of Santa Fe. So if you want to go to that and meet Bob Edwards in an intimate setting, give us a call right now, 428-1393. And then the next night, Saturday, the 10th of March at 7 in the evening, Bob Edwards will read from his book, A Voice in the Box, My Life in Radio, and we'll be doing Q&A with none other than our own Bill Dupuy, KSFR News Director, and that will be at 7 o'clock at the James A. Little Theater. And you can get tickets to that, too, if you call right now and make a donation, 428-1393, 428-1393. Tom Johnson.
Yes, that's right. The kind of journalism that Bob Edwards is talking about is a professional level, is really admirable, and it's becoming more and more scarce all across the country. We're especially fortunate to have it here in Santa Fe, where we have a leading radio news staff that can literally take it to the street, experienced professional reporters. And to keep that kind of journalism going, please give a call to 428-1393 and make a pledge. Ideally, that can be what's called a sustaining pledge. What that means is that KSFR will bill your credit card a set amount each month, That could be $10 or $20 a month. If you pledge $10 a month, that comes down to about 35 cents a day. I would suggest that 35 cents a day, your daily newspaper, that's cheaper than your daily newspaper, and it's certainly cheaper than any local news and information that you can hear on your way to work or way home. So please make those phones ring and make that sustaining pledge when your call is answered.
428-1393, and I want to make a special call out to all of the listeners to this show who come up to me in various situations in Santa Fe and say, hey, I listen to your show every day. That happens quite a bit, and it's incredibly happy-making and gratifying when somebody says they listen. So if you listen, how about it, 35 cents a day, 45 cents a day, 50 That's cents right. a day. These sustaining memberships are terrific. You pledge on a monthly basis, and it's withdrawn from either, I think they can do it, bank account, credit card. There's different ways you can That's do right. it. It's absolutely safe, encrypted, confidential, and all of that. So don't have to worry about those kinds of things.
And the real value of a sustaining pledge is that it allows the station management to do some reasonable long-range planning. That is, we can look out and say, we will have this much money coming in every month. It builds a foundation for the station for planning and picking up the kind of events, investing in the kind of events that we can do, such as Bob Edwards' visit. Last month, Russell Baker was here. Russ Baker was here talking about his book. That kind of thing is very meaningful, I think, for the people of Santa Fe, given the really intelligent, dedicated, thoughtful population that we have. So make those sustaining pledges. Call 428-1393 right now.
428-1393, and we're going to go back to our interview with Bob Edwards in just a moment. But I think it's, you know, not only can KSFR engage in long-range planning when you make a sustaining membership pledge, but also you can do long-range planning, and that kind of long-range planning is you can plan that you can turn on your radio every day when you get into the car, and KSFR will still be on it. KSFR has been around for many years. We have been under our current incarnation, namely a nonprofit owned by the Northern New Mexico Radio Foundation, which is managing KSFR, for approximately 10 years. And I was here at the very beginning. I was doing a Latin music show on the weekends, which I still do, and just kind of here as a volunteer. And then I was hired as, I think, the second or third employee. They had one employee who was a kind of all-around, all-purpose engineer and technical guy, and then I got hired and started doing administration, and then Bill Dupuis and Dal Dierman, who became general manager, and it was a small station just struggling to define itself. And I think in these last 10 years, we have done a really good job, if I may say so, defining ourselves. And one of the things we've done is put an emphasis on news and talk. So BBC and local news by the KSFR news team, we swept every news gathering award there is. This show has won some awards as well. And we have become a real independent public radio station. Now, we would like to grow and improve, and one gets to a stage where you have enough stability that you can start thinking about new things. That's where we're at. But realistically, we need that listener support, so we hope you call, and call right now.
That's right, and we are talking about Santa Fe Radio, but after all, our signal reaches up to Taos, down to Albuquerque, into Los Alamos, all over the Jemez Mountain area, so we really see ourselves as a regional radio station in many ways.
That's true.
For northern New Mexico, and so we hope that people from all of those towns and counties, as we spread out from Santa Fe, will give a call too. Your contributions are much needed and appreciate. You can call 428-1393.
I was going to say it in unison with you. 428-1393. And let's go back to Bob Edwards. We'll be back in a moment. So while Bob Edwards is talking, give a quick call, and we'll be back soon.
There were, over the years, attempts to destroy or disable NPR. What happened, and how did NPR fare during those times?
Newt Gingrich, for one, publicly declared he was going to do away with the whole Corporation for Public Broadcasting. They were looking for a scalp. You know, they wanted an agency in the federal government that they could eliminate and say, look, we're shrinking government. We're, you know, making it more efficient and not wasting your tax dollars. And they thought that the Corporation for Public Broadcasting would be an easy kill, that nobody would care about it. Well, people cared a great deal about it, and people rallied all across the country. And, you know, it wasn't about me or Morning Edition. It was about Big Bird, primarily. It was about all those moms with the little tykes in front of the TV set. Well, you know, they're doing work. That was important to them. And Newt got his head handed to him. That, you know, they've revived that again in recent years, and with the same result, really. This is a service that's important to people. Public television and public radio, and people want it, and they've demonstrated that to Washington politicians.
What has been the effect? I mean, you talk about this a little bit in your book on NPR of being called this supposedly derogatory label, the liberal media. How did they respond when people cast that epithet?
Oh my God, they are so afraid of that, to hysterical levels. I think this is one of my few criticisms of NPR, is that they pay too much attention to political bullies who are trying to discredit them by calling them liberal all the time. The people who are saying that are the, you know, the Rush Limbaughs and the Glenn Becks, who feel if you're not presenting information exactly as they are, you are a liberal, when in fact they are far, far right-wingers. You know, there's a big distance between far, far right-wing and liberals. And, you know, NPR is not some the far-left counterpart to Limbaugh and Beck's far-right. There is a huge ground in between. I think NPR does a very good job covering the news fairly and accurately, and should not be worried about critics like, you know, the Becks and Limbaugh followers. They're going to be criticized anyway. They're going to be called leftist and discredited no matter what they do. So they shouldn't be concerned about, you know, pulling punches on the air or wondering how this is going to play with the right wing. I think that's the wrong way to do the news. You don't worry about the right wing. You just report the truth and let the chips fall where they may.
NPR nearly destroyed itself in the early 1980s, and you describe this a little bit in the book. They went very deep into debt. How did that happen? How did they recover?
It was a panic. We anticipated that the Reagan administration would come in and do away with us, do away with public broadcasting. So we had to find ways of funding. I should point out that NPR at the time was still dependent on funds from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. It doesn't work that way anymore. The money goes to local stations who then pay dues to belong to NPR and get the programming. So NPR was trying to wean itself from funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and it had just put up satellites, and satellite broadcasting was new, and the transmission of NPR signal by satellite. So they decided to use the satellite, which had excess capacity, to form ancillary businesses. You can form profit-making businesses in support of your nonprofit. So NPR was going to go into business. There was a paging service. There were multiple businesses that NPR had planned. But NPR was not business-like, and no one in the management of NPR had ever run a railroad before. So they didn't know how to go into business. They didn't understand that when you start a business, you need an initial capital investment, and that there's a long pipeline before you see any results from your ventures. And public radio couldn't last that long. First of all, we didn't put in the initial investment, and we were spending money that we had anticipated coming in from these businesses. Well, they didn't come in. So they ran up a debt very quickly in a very short period of time of $7 million, which in 1982 dollars and in the public broadcasting system is a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah.
And we nearly died, but the stations got together and bailed us out. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting did, with stations helping, and that took a while to pay that off, but it finally happened, and oh, that was scary. That was scary. We came right up to a payday when we thought it was the end, and I think they reached this deal with Congress and CPB at like 2 or 3 in the morning, and I went on the air at 5, so...
Yeah, and you were ready to say goodbye.
Oh yeah, yeah. I had prepared a little goodbye speech, this was a grand, noble experiment, and certainly worthwhile. And sorry it didn't work out. Bye, everyone.
Were there any medium or long term effects of that kind of disaster?
Yeah, it made us. Conservative not conservative politically, I mean conservative in what we did. We were much less ambitious for a long time. I don't know, maybe that's a good thing. and very parsimonious, of course. We didn't travel a lot or invest money in stories that would take us beyond the first taxi zone around the NPR building. So travel money and that sort of thing was scarce for a long time. But it took a few years to get out of that mode.
We're talking to Bob Edwards. And the number is 428-1393 for the KSFR Fund Drive, 428-1393. And boy, we are doing great so far. There's people to thank, and that list is being handed to me by the cyber gods, who will be here with us in just a moment.
Oh, thank you.
But thank you so much. Ah, Mary Lynn LeBlanc.
Okay. Well, we have, of course, Susan Harris, who just absolutely loves your intelligence and what you do on the air.
Thank you, Susan.
And Cheryl Kenzie and George Duncan, who are both going to the reception Friday night. And
Tom Johnson knows them.
Yeah, yeah. And then Robert and Caroline Eisenstein.
Oh, wonderful.
Also,
they're fabulous.
Love your show. Want to support you completely, Mary Charlotte.
Thanks to all of you. Now, we have more than broken our $1,000 limit, and so we would like to make the audacious challenge of $2,500 for this hour. Tom Johnson, think we can do it?
I think we can do it, and I will go so far as to say, if anybody is driving by on their way to work and they want to stop by and drop off a check for $100 or more, that person will be my guest at Friday night's reception for Bob Edwards. So you can get the equivalent of a $200 value for a $100 check for KSFR. We're down here at the Santa Fe Baking Company.
Sitting in the corner.
In the corner. With,
as usual.
People buttering their English muffins and the pastries as we speak. They're probably not listening to us on the radio, but they certainly can see that there's something unusual going on here. Well, it's usual, isn't it? Every day.
It is usual. I've been sitting in this corner on this chair for the last 8.5 years. 428-1393 is the number. And speaking of butter, you know, ladies and gentlemen, where your bread is buttered. It's at KSFR.
Yeah, that's right.
And this is the station that you listen to. This is the station that you like. Many of you, this is the station that you're on. I was trying to do the math. I should do it and tell people next break, but... doing this for 8.5 years, 5 days a week, let's say
approximately 50 weeks a year, average of 3 people per day, sometimes more, sometimes less. That's thousands and thousands of people have been sitting at this table where you're sitting, Tom Johnson, being interviewed, and they understand the importance of public radio. A lot of public radio stations around the country don't even have this kind of local programming. They have NPR or PRI programming, which is great, but this whole phenomenon of letting the community get to know itself, get to know each other through the medium of radio is really important, and it is more rare than it should be. It would be great if there were a radio cafe in every city in the United States with somebody sitting there and interviewing all the local folks.
That's right. Mary Charlotte is just part of a long tradition. I remember as a kid growing up in northern Wisconsin in the late 1940s and 1950s, live radio shows mostly coming out of Chicago or Milwaukee. One of them had to do with the Johnson family in Chicago and Oak Park, I think it was. And then there were always live radio shows coming from various nightclubs in Chicago, which were pretty exotic for a kid who was living up in the snowy woods of Wisconsin. But they were commercially supported, unlike KSFR, which depends on your contributions. So we want you to break that silence back in the newsroom. Make those phones ring. Remember that sounds of silence are appreciated only in monasteries, libraries, and the Simon Garfunkel song. So make that sustaining pledge by calling 428-1393.
428-1393, and we are making now our goal of $2,500 for this hour. 428-1393. There's also an 800 number, which Marilyn LeBlanc has right in front of her, and I don't. What is it? 1-866?
907-5737. That's 866-907-KSFR.
That's right, 907-5737. And for those people who are calling from out of area and calling on landlines, which many of us still use, I still use a landline at home, it is quite important to save those few pennies, and you can pledge those extra pennies to us. 428-1393. And don't forget those sustaining memberships, monthly membership, any amount, small amounts, medium amounts, whatever. I pledge $10 and $15 a month to several organizations that I like and respect, including a number of media organizations. And you seem not to miss those, let's say, $15 a month, but would you really write a check for $180? Maybe not, but that's what it amounts to per year. So we really encourage that. 428-1393, 428-1393, going for our goal of $2,500 this hour. We're probably about halfway there, so let's do it. Let's go back to Bob Edwards. Oh, and one more thing. The Bob Edwards reception this Friday night from 5 to 7 at Rio Chama Steakhouse. Bob Edwards will be there doing a book signing, and once again, super deluxe hors d'oeuvres, champagne, and lots of good stuff, wine. And then Saturday night at the James A. Little Theater, let's sell out the James A. Little Theater. You can get your book there. You can get a book by making a pledge today. You can get tickets to the Bob Edwards. There's probably some package where you can get everything, and they'll tell you about that because we have lovely and beautiful phone volunteers standing by. 428-1393. Let's go back now to Bob Edwards.
There's this, what would you call it, a kind of syndrome that you have, you see it everywhere in all kinds of organizations. You have at first, when the organization is young, a kind of freewheeling, risk-taking group, and as it gets more established, it tends to lose its spirit. And at NPR, you describe kind of being micromanaged and forced to do stories that you did not think were good journalism and do things that imitated cabled network news, which was also not very good. What is it that is so difficult about keeping the original spirit of a young, fresh organization?
Part of it is size. We were little. And NPR started in 71. It went on the air for the first time. And when you're small and you don't have a lot of resources, you have to become inventive and you become bold and experimental and you try anything. and it's very exciting. It's a great time to be in any organization like that. And I've had it happen twice now, because satellite radio was that way when I started in satellite radio. I joined NPR when it was in its third year, and I joined satellite radio when it was in its third year. And it was the same thing. You could be bold, experimental, and this was okay. You could get away with a lot. And if it didn't work, well, didn't matter. You learned from that and improve next time. Tried it again next time. But when organizations grow and get bigger, and they get more bureaucratic, NPR started as a bottom up. We soldiers could experiment and decide what was going to be in the program that day. As NPR got bigger and took itself much more seriously, it became top down. And what was going to be on the program was dictated from above. And it wasn't, it was like Mickey Rooney and company. Let's put on a show. That's how it was at the beginning. And it's not that way anymore. You say, here's what you have in your show today. And it's not fun anymore. I mean, it's good. It's fabulous. It's wonderful programming. It's solid journalism. But it's not fun when they're putting out memos telling you how to pronounce words, and everyone must sound the same. That's the other thing. There used to be a morning edition way of doing a story and an all things considered way of doing a story. And over time, they announced that, no, there is now this brand called NPR News, and all programs on NPR will sound like this, and we will have this style, and we will... And that's just, to me, that's not broadcasting. Each person is different. Each person has a different style. Each person has a different approach to the audience, a different relationship with the audience. And that's to be celebrated. That's diversity, and that's wonderful. I don't like brands. I was never good at saluting. Even, when I was in the Army, I wasn't very good at that.
Yeah. Well, after nearly 25 years as anchor of Morning Edition, you were suddenly and apparently out of the blue fired from your job. And as you write in your memoir, you don't know why to this day that happened. But there was an outcry, a wonderful, beautiful outcry in your favor. Tens of thousands of names on petitions, station managers all over the country getting furious calls from their listeners. And it's an interesting tale and a sad tale of vindictive and lying and incompetent management. One wonders, reading it, whether good managers are in short supply in the radio business, in public radio. Do you have any reflections on that time now, looking back?
Well, just for the record, the people who were bad to me are gone. They're not at NPR anymore.
Yeah.
And I never held it against the organization. I love NPR. Always have, always will. As for a couple of individuals, that's different. But, that's all in the book. I think, no one has a monopoly on bad management. our country sometimes has bad management. And every institution and private companies, I think, sometimes have bad management. And what are you going to do? People are human. They've had a lot of problems lately, and just made some announcements recently that filling positions that have been open for quite a while. So maybe they're getting it together now, and I hope so. I wish them well. I wish them the very, very best.
Well, immediately upon the news that you were leaving NPR, you got an offer from satellite radio, XM Satellite, and the chapters, I just find it fascinating in your book, the chapters on the new show, the Bob Edwards show that's on satellite that we also carry on KSFR, and many, many public stations now do carry that, are so full of love and excitement. You've gone from daily news reporting to something that's more like an art form, the shows that you do now. And these new shows are an archive of both sort of current and historical treasures. You interviewed a lot of people in their 90s who were national treasures. And it sounds like, I mean, reading it, I felt like this break from NPR was a blessing in a quite nasty disguise, but a blessing indeed. You're doing now, it sounds like, exactly what you want to do without being micromanaged. You have total editorial control, and this beautiful thing has come out of it.
You've said it exactly right. That's that's the truth. And so it's much more pleasing to me, and I'm, I think, doing my best work ever, and it's much more satisfying. Mostly what I do is conversation, which is kind of lost on the radio. There's a lot of shouting and screaming and ranting and raving, not a lot of conversation, and I enjoy that. I'm having the time of my life.
You write about the most satisfying interview you have ever had. What was that?
A Jesuit priest named Greg Boyle, who works in East Los Angeles among Latino gang members and tries to get them out of gangs and find work for them and redeem their lives, turn them around. And he is magnificently successful at doing that. And he's very good at telling stories, and that's, you know, the essence of radio, is telling stories. He is a modest man, though, and he is very frank about the times when he has failed to reach someone, and those stories are also very compelling, and he tells them. I've interviewed him twice now, an hour each time. And he's never repeated a story. I think he could just, you know, I could interview him every day, and we would never repeat the story, sadly enough. But I'm just excited about his work, and I send him money. I just think he's saving lives. He's not only saving the lives of these young people, but he's saving the lives of people that they used to harm. He's a priest, but he's redeeming their lives, not their souls. He's less interested in that. He doesn't care if they go to church. He just wants them to stay alive and live productive, meaningful lives. And I love him for it. I totally support him.
In one of your early chapters, you talk about a wonderful teacher you had named Ed Bliss. And I just wanted to, if you like, give you the opportunity to tell us about this man and what he gave your life.
All good things in my career have happened because I met Ed Bliss. He was my graduate school professor of journalism at American University in 71, 72. And I was his assistant, his graduate assistant. And he taught writing. He was a writer and editor at CBS News for 25 years, which is why I went to AU. I saw him. I saw his name in the, you know, directory in the catalog, and I said, "This is the guy. This is the guy who's worked with Edward R. Murrow and Walter Cronkite, and you know, he's been where I want to go." He was just a very sweet man, a loving man, a gentle man, until you handed in your copy. And then he was Attila the Hun, and just tolerated no mistakes. There were no small mistakes. There were only mistakes, and they all mattered gravely. And when you've been taught by somebody like that, you learn. You really learn. It's, you know, it's like tough love. And to this day, I can't write anything without thinking of him, even though he's now gone. He was my friend for the last 30 years of his life until he was 90 years old. And I just loved him. And all of us who were his students and are now in the best newsrooms in the country, at, you know, CNN and CBS and the Associated Press. And we just love him dearly.
We're in a moment where there are major changes in the way people consume, so to speak, consume. People listen to radio, listen to audio, listen to news. What do you see as the future of radio, if you have any kind of crystal ball on where radio's going?
Well, I don't know where it's going, but I know we're going to be there. Radio keeps reinventing itself. You know, it's been pronounced dead so many times, and it just continues to thrive. It changes, you know, and once it was all AM dominated, and then, you know, FM had its day, and, you know, I'm appalled by a lot of the stuff I hear on commercial radio. I rejoice in a lot of the stuff I hear on public radio. But there are different forms of radio now. You know, and the internet is an important player, but you can now get radio on your cell phone. And then that's what radio does. It adapts. New technology comes along. Radio isn't replaced. It just gloms onto that new technology and becomes a part of it. So I think, you know, radio is so attractive because of its portability, its accessibility, the fact that it doesn't require you to look at a screen is a good thing. And it's one of the positives in our favor. So I think radio is always going to be around. It's just going to come to you in different forms.
You have helped to raise millions of dollars for public radio. Why should listeners come out to support KSFR?
Because it's more important than ever. And, you know, look what's happening to our business. Newspapers, alas, are dying. Bloggers, you never know what you're reading anymore on the web. You know, it could be some 12-year-old in his jammies in Kansas. You know, what credibility does he have? You need public radio more than ever because it's a source of quality, edited, reasoned journalism, and it's in depth. And, oh my gosh, it would be a horrible world without it, at both the local level and from NPR. And I support it. I'm a member of my station, and I hope others will, continue their membership, or if they've not been a member before, now's the time. It's just more important than ever in this crazy world.
Bob Edwards is the host of The Bob Edwards Show on Sirius XM Radio and Bob Edwards Weekend, which is carried on KSFR on Saturday mornings, very early, 7 to 9 a.m., and the author of several books. The new one is A Voice in the Box, My Life in Radio. Thank you so much for being with us, and we look forward to seeing you this weekend.
Oh, I enjoyed the conversation. I'm really looking forward to be back in Santa Fe.
Bob Edwards on KSFR. Bob Edwards in Santa Fe, 428-1393. And we are more than halfway to our $1,500 goal, but we've got a lot to do, Tom Johnson, in the next 4 minutes.
Yes, we do. One of the interesting things that Bob touched on a little bit is the importance of localness in radio, but also here in Santa Fe, we have an unusually high number of poets, writers, journalists, etc., all of whom speak of voice in their textual work. And the fact is that KSFR has a distinctive voice, both as a station, but both as people who are regularly on that. I'm very pleased and honored to be here with you this morning at Santa Fe Radio Cafe, because Mary Charlotte's show does a special job of continually bringing together both the scientific and the cultural aspects of northern New Mexico in her conversations with people who are both living here in town but also passing through.
428-1393. I have to give that number because we want to reach our very high goal this hour. 428-1393. We've got 3.5 minutes left in which to do it. Go ahead.
You call that number and make a sustaining pledge if you would. But also, those of you who are regular listeners know of the Jazz a la Carta with Elga and Carlos on Friday mornings, which is one of my favorite shows that I'm always able to tune into. So it's those unique voices, literally unique voices, that help make this station the great high-value media platform that it is.
428-1393 is the number. And if you call and make a pledge, you can get the Bob Edwards book, A Voice in a Box, My Life at Radio. You can get a ticket to the reception at the Rio Chama Steakhouse this Friday from 5 to 7. You can go to the event on Saturday evening at 7 o'clock. And I'll tell you what, Bob Edwards has been speaking to sold-out, enthusiastic crowds for so much of his career. He has spent so much time fundraising for public radio stations all around the country, and it's a real honor to have him. He was here some years ago, and he's brilliant, and he's great, and he has so many stories. I think it'll be great fun. 428-1393, and we've got some people to thank. Mary Lynn.
We do, and there's many of these people who think it's an honor to have you on the air. Alana Zachary says listening to you makes her a better person. Listening to you on
Good
the radio.
Good heavens. Okay. Thank you, Elena.
You have big shoes, Mary Charlotte.
Good heavens.
Okay, and Jamaica contributed.
Thank you.
Nora Fisher.
Thank you.
And Nancy Warren, who is very grateful for being on the Radio Cafe with her Pueblo dancing, and she's a sustaining member as well.
Nancy has an amazing story. She was a great and accomplished photographer, and she lost her eyesight and went into a period of real, I think, depression and had a hard time. And she told me after we did the show on her book of photography that part of what helped her recover was listening to KSFR, listening to the show, listening to the station. And that no higher praise for public radio than that.
Wonderful. And one more. Frederic Windley, and there's more to come because I see that two people are on phones right now, so keep those phones ringing. Three people are on right now.
428-1393. We're going for that $2,500 goal. We've already passed the $1,500 goal, and let's see what we can do. We've just got about 1 minute left until the news comes on. 428-1393. And I have to say, it's an honor for me to be able to do the show every day, to be able to do what I want with this show, do what the community wants. So many emails every day to the point where I can't even keep up with it. Ladies and gentlemen, if you've sent me an email and I didn't respond, just send it again because I get hundreds and hundreds per week and I can't keep up with it all. But it's an honor to be able to do it.
And needless to say, members of the staff like Mary Charlotte do not have a vast secretarial pool that's responding to these emails. It's still a relatively low overhead but high quality operation here at KSFR, and you can keep that going if you please make a sustaining pledge by calling 428-1393, or if you want to if you're out of state and want to make that toll-free call 866-907-5737.
And it's time to go. Thank you so much for listening, and keep those phones ringing. Ciao.